Welcome to the Modern Drunkard Podcast. This is Frank Kelly Rich with Nick Plummer, and our special guest tonight is Sarah Bell Fisher, legendary Denver bartender and rock and roll singer. And who was that we just heard, Nick?
The Manx, In Our Cups, correct?
And we have Sarah from The Manx right here.
Yes, one of our favorite bartenders on the planet, and she has mixed us up some fine Bloody Mary cocktails to help with our hangovers this fine Saturday morning.
Seemed appropriate today.
That was installed by Sarah last night for me. She's maintaining it this morning, which is very nice of her. Very nice.
Yeah, and not only are you a rock and roller, but you're also one of the fabled bartenders in Denver, certainly. I think you've worked at almost all of the great dives. The Cricket on the Hill, the Lion's Lair, Gabor's.
Old Curtis Street was a nice...
The bars seem to close, like, once you get there, though.
No, it's actually once I leave.
Once she leaves, it takes all the magic away.
Once I put my notice in, it's over.
No, I'm not a big fan of tomato juice, but this is fantastic.
It is.
It's very pretty.
It's a gorgeous drink. What exactly do we have in here, Sarah?
Well, it's a standard Bloody Mary, so we've got vodka and pepper, salt, fresh cracked, I like, and celery salt. Worcestershire sauce, Tabasco is my preferred brand of hot sauce, and tomato juice. But what makes it so pretty are all these fantastic garnishes. We've got the standard celery. We've got some green onion, some pickled green beans that I pickled at home. Frank gave us those delicious olives to put in there. And what are these, cherry peppers? You need lemon and lime, both. That's one thing I love about the Bloody Mary is you can really, you know, decide what you want, what you feel like having. You can throw in whatever spices you like. You know, it's pretty versatile. And it's a great hangover cure.
Yes, yes. It's legendary, in fact, because it has things in it that on their own affect a hangover. Mm-hmm. Tomato juice, any kind of tomato product supposed to help. The alcohol, of course. Bitters.
Oh, the spice.
The spices.
I always crave something spicy when I'm hungover for some reason. But helps you sweat out the poisons, I guess.
Yeah, but I think the Worcestershire sauce, too, kind of preps your stomach. You can get ready for, you know, you're sipping on this while you're waiting for your food to come. That's the thing with a Bloody Mary. You really can't. It's curative, and it also, you can be creative.
Yeah, it has a broad base, so you can throw whatever you want in there, pretty much. We'll just keep Sarah making cocktails as we go along. We'll be finishing these in about 2 minutes or so.
Yeah, speaking of that, Sarah, let's talk a little bit about bar etiquette. Like, what do you consider is essential for someone who's going to be drinking at the bar that you're bartending at?
Well, like you said, you need to learn how to socially interact with other people with alcohol involved. And that's something that prohibition to the age of 21 just doesn't do for people.
No.
You have people chugging beers and doing like 30 shots and then ending up in the emergency room.
Yeah.
And not realizing that it's a social aspect to drinking where you go to a bar, you drink and you talk to people and it loosens you up and it's easier to meet people and it's fun. It's supposed to be a process. It's not supposed to be a goal.
And where the goal is just to get as drunk as you possibly can, and you don't know how
the party gets busted.
Yeah.
You don't know how you're going to react. I think there was an article that you once wrote, Frank, about getting to know your inner drunkard, and you really need to know who this person is because it can take you by surprise if you're not aware. If all of a sudden you're totally hammered and you don't know how you're going to react to that situation,
absolutely. I mean,
it's a time bomb in the bar.
You really don't know yourself until you've blacked out. And eventually, you come to know by other people telling you that whether if you're a good person or a bad person.
Well, the worst is some of the travel articles that I did where I blackout and I had a tape recorder to remind me of what a jackass I am. The next morning I'd wake up and play the tape recorder back and go, wow, who is this asshole? You know, it's a lesson. You know, I recommend that to everyone. If you're going to go out on a good, you know, do it at least once or twice. Take a tape recorder and just record what kind of nonsense goes on. And it's educational. You realize just that you aren't as smooth and funny as you think you are when you're drunk.
I find that that's the opposite. When I record myself, I listen to it the next day, and I just sound like James Bond. You know, I'm kidding.
Well, that's because you're listening to it drunk. That was smooth.
Well, you know what? Sometimes you have to get drunk as a means of interpretation to understand yourself on these tape recorders, and also to read the handwriting on these cocktail napkins. Yeah, if you get drunk, you can actually say, "Okay, that's what I was saying." My drink's done. What do you guys waiting for?
All right, fair enough.
Supposedly, I'm kind of the Bloody Mary queen in around town.
That's what they say.
So I picked three different versions of the Bloody Mary.
Okay.
So what we just had was the standard. The next is going to be the Bloodshot.
I love the Bloodshot because I'm not a big fan of tomato juice, and it is basically a Bloody Mary without the tomato juice.
It's delicious.
A great hangover shot.
Aren't they all?
Well, yeah. No.
I don't like
prairie fire. I'm going to say.
Oh, are you kidding me? Prairie fires are fantastic for hangovers.
My buddy Bill bought me one of those once.
You right out of it.
He just asked me if I wanted to do a shot, and he didn't tell me what it was. So I went, sure, and I turned around, and he handed me this prairie fire, and I wasn't prepared for it. I did a shot of it, and I spit it right back up on the bar because it shocked me. It startled me so much.
The bloodshot is smooth.
Because tequila in Tabasco is right. kind of a brutal punch in the gut if you aren't expecting it.
The bloodshot is smooth, and it has all the curative effects of a Bloody Mary, but you can drink it faster, so maybe you do one alongside your Bloody Mary. So bloodshots?
Let's do it.
Indeed.
Absolutely. Okay, while she's doing that, let's get into some more booze news. A reader of ours sent it in as a possible topic for the booze news. Apparently, Panasonic, the electronics company, has created some sort of device that mimics a plant using photosynthesis, and it takes CO2 from factories or whatever and turns it into ethyl alcohol.
Huh.
So you can imagine it's like these little robotic stations set up around factories, and you just stop by there and fill up your jug.
Put it on top of a 50-gallon charred oak barrel and just set it outside of a factory and
turning pollution into booze.
That is the human spirit at work.
That is. I mean, it's such a great idea. I mean, I can't think of anything better to turn it into.
I need one for my house.
Although probably the eco weenies will. Probably trying to use it for cars or something.
But. Well, hey, there's such a thing as a siphon, isn't there?
True.
Yes.
Yeah, but they'll put something in it so you can't
drink it. That's just cruel.
Which is a pity because I think that would bring you closer to your car if you really love your car, if you guys drinking the same stuff. Don't you think?
Perhaps, yeah.
Okay, so that's good news. That was sent to us by Mark. Thanks, Mark.
So I understand we have a new sponsor.
This is true. Very proud to bring on board Tiger Whiskey, whose slogan is, make you crazy like Tiger. We're the sole Western agent for their merchandise. We're selling the t-shirts on the website at shop.drunkard.com.
Is Tiger Whiskey available in the U.S.?
Not as yet. They're having some troubles with customs and importing laws.
Yeah, I heard that it was because each and every bottle has a little bit of tiger
in it. That's a myth.
That's a myth. It's no. Yeah, they don't milk the tigers. And
they have assured me that is not true at all.
Okay, but where do these things get started?
I'm not even entirely sure where this stuff is made at, but I've tried some, and it is 96 proof, and it is fantastic, and it's true.
It's the tiger milk. I'm betting it's the tiger milk.
It makes you crazy like tiger.
Yeah, well, that's the tiger milk.
Okay, we have our new drinks
here. Bloodshots, these are double, so,
Double bloodshots. Are we going to down them in one as we should?
Yeah, I think I'll down,
In one?
Down in one?
All right.
It's a double.
Fair enough.
Hey, we're professionals.
Trained professionals.
Chin.
Wow. That's the stuff.
That is delicious. See, that's a shot that you wouldn't mind doing a lot of.
Oh, yeah.
Because frankly, there are some shots I don't like Jaeger, for example.
Well, it's the sugary ones you just end up getting. They end up getting too much.
Yeah, I just don't. I mean, when I was younger, perhaps, I didn't mind it. But.
Yeah, when I lived in Chicago, we drank a lot of Jägermeister. It just seemed to be the drink. And then there was, for a while in Colorado, we were drinking Tuaca.
I guess for a while, Denver was the biggest market for Tuaca in America.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think that it was our livers that did that.
Really?
Yes. Around that time.
It's not as popular as it used to be.
No, it seems to have dropped off. Okay, as a bartender, you're right there in the trenches. What do you think is the most popular shot right now?
Fireball, without question.
Fireball.
Yeah.
That is that cinnamon hot...
Cinnamon whiskey. Yeah. It's actually pretty good, but it packs a wallop of a hangover, just all the sugar.
It's a DeCooper product?
No.
It's Beam, I think, isn't it? Isn't Fireball a Beam product?
It's got a name on the back that I don't recognize, but it could be a subsidiary or an affiliate of Beam.
A Beam?
The company here. We've all had some fun experimenting with cocktails.
Yeah. Back in the days at the Cricket on the Hill when we both worked there.
Yes, indeed.
All three of us.
A lot of late nights. Sorry, Tom. We were drinking all your liquor after hours.
Yes. Sorry about that, Mr. Santarelli. It's, anyway.
We won't get into that.
But we just might.
And this segs quite nicely into a question sent in by Dan in Los Angeles. Basically, what he's asking is, where is the best place for a drunkard to sit in a bar? He himself likes to sit next to the near the bar taps. This way, he gets missed pours, which is good. Good communication with the bartender. They wait a long time for a drink, and he gets a clear view of everything.
Yeah, depending on where the taps are situated, I'm thinking of the Three Kings Tavern, where the taps would kind of obscure the bartender's view. of you if you were sitting near them.
Right, those are
for me at Three Kings, it's like right on either end of the long taps.
Yeah, it would have to depend on the bar.
Yeah, I think it really depends on the bar.
If you are by the taps, you do get to talk with the bartender more. I mean, because you're standing there pouring drinks.
What if you don't like the bartender?
Well,
then you sit on the end of the bar.
Okay. When I was a younger man, I would follow Dan's example, and I would sit near the taps. If you get to know the bartender, which is always a good thing, because then you can work into doing after hours. You get, and as he says, you get the miss pours, and you always want to buddy up with the guy who's pouring the drinks.
So, what are like what's one of the best ways to get a hold of a bartender, to get the bartender's attention on a busy night?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and I see people struggle with it all the time. They need a drink. They don't know how to properly get the attention of the bartender, because bartenders can get, let's just say it, we can get bitchy when things are busy and somebody tries to get our attention the wrong way.
Well, there's the green flag is one where you just put the hold up a $20 bill in between the two fingers.
You know
fingers.
What's weird though? I mean, some bartenders seem to like that and other ones.
Well, I'll tell you what I think about that is that a lot of times, if you hold it on the bar flat like this, I'm always looking at the bar. I'm looking for empty drinks. That's a good way.
That's a good idea.
And that, but if you're waving it at me, that's a whole different thing. Like I'm out trying to grab, you know, like I'm in one of those machines where the dollars are dropping and I'm, you know. Yeah. But if you subtly lay your arm on the bar with a bill in it, that lets me know that person wants to order. And that's a good way.
And eye contact, I think, is always
eye
good. Especially in a rock bar. So you have to eyeball the bartender.
You have to be watching.
And then, you know, if you turn away, you'll lose your opportunity. So you have to make sure once they look at you look them and you make eye contact.
That's where I think the bill can be useful. You're holding it out and you're maintaining your conversation. You're not being rude with the person you're sitting with or, you know, standing there with, talking to. But at the same time, you're... I'll just say it. The very worst thing is to yell an order at me if I'm not looking at you. If I'm not making eye contact with you and you just kind of shout your order out at me, I'm going to hear it and it's going to distract me from what I'm already doing. So it's slowing me down.
Sure.
So
what about screaming? What about screaming medic? Man down, medic, medic. No, is that bad?
It's kind of cute and it's kind of funny and it really depends too how busy I am. I'm busy, funny and cute are the worst things in the world. I'm not interested in that.
Snapping your fingers and whistling at the same time.
Oh, that's perfect. Bartender's attention.
I've never met a bartender that didn't like that.
You know, you're going to get the attention of the doorman who's going to throw you right up.
Speaking of that, what are do you have any good 86 stories? Like people have been 86 from your place for ridiculous behavior.
Why would you want to focus on defeat and failure? Don't we always try and provide the upside?
Sometimes it is hilarious.
Because it's always funnier.
I guess so. Yeah.
There's no funny stories about the guy who stayed at the bar.
I know, but when I see a guy get dragged out of the bar, I'm always like, you know, there by the grace of God, go I. I mean, I could have been me.
I'll tell you a funny story. And this happened when I was sitting at Gabor's. I was on break from the Cricket. And there was one of the old regulars at the Cricket that was sitting there at the bar. And I sat down to have a little drink and take my break. And he says, oh, yeah, those guys, you know, those jerks, 86'd me from the Cricket. They said I peed in the back room. Come on. You know, who would do a thing like that? Da, da, da. I'm like, yeah, buddy, that's really rough, you know? And he's kind of trying to get me to un-86 him, but that's impossible. So once he realizes this is impossible, you know, an impossibility, he says to me, well, so what if I did pee in the bathroom?
I knew it.
So the truth comes out.
What about the guy at Gabor's who they caught peeking over the women's bathroom stalls?
Goodness.
And they hauled him out. As they're hauling him out, he's like, it's a free country. They're dragging the guy out. Because he was staring, like hiding in a bathroom stall and peeking over.
Watching girls pee.
Yeah.
It's a free country.
His idea.
Well, bartending anywhere near Colfax or bouncing anywhere near Colfax is always going to be entertaining. There's always strange things that happen on that. 30 miles of crazy, as it's known.
Yeah, and for our listeners who don't live in Denver, Colfax is kind of the evil long. It's the longest street in America, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of his claim to fame. But on East Colfax and West Colfax as well, there's just a long line of dive bars and
crazy
criminal activity.
Yeah, criminal activity.
It's not as bad as it used to be, though.
You don't see as many prostitutes.
Yeah. I mean, there used to be it used to be more of a Wild West kind of scenario. Now it's pretty.
And there were a lot of characters. The guy used to roller skate in his tutu.
Yeah, whatever happened to that guy?
He got hit by a car.
Oh.
Yeah, that's sad.
Then
there's one-eyed Wesley Snipes, the guy who shadow boxes, looks like Wesley Snipes and has the eye patch.
Yeah,
he's one of my favorite.
Right. Is he still around?
Oh, yeah, he's still around.
This push-up guy.
Oh yeah,
or exercise man.
Yeah, the guy who'll do push-ups for dollar bills.
No, there was a guy who would be doing like jumping jacks all the time at the bus stops.
Yeah, right. Gotta stay healthy.
He was in great shape.
The pregnant lady who is she's been pregnant for
like when that kid comes out, it's gonna be ready for college.
Yeah,
she's been pregnant for I think 16 years. Yeah,
yeah.
And she's just about ready to go into labor every time you talk to her.
She just needs one more drink and she'll
One more drink and she's ready to pop that kid right on out.
Yeah, Colfax is an interesting place. And incidentally, we haven't heard the song that has been submitted, but when you guys do hear it, the very first line in the song, East Colfax Avenue.
There you go.
The which song are we talking about?
The Manx song. That's
no, it opened the show up. It's played.
Well, we're in real time here now. I can...
Don't tell our secret.
Don't ruin the magic, Sarah. Don't
ruin
the magic.
This song was written for this podcast, so...
Yeah, it's tall. Well, let's get back to this question, though. I mean, so
where's the best spot to sit at the bar?
Yeah.
Well, it depends if I'm in a brooding mood. You know, then the corner's great because you can just, you know, leave me alone. You, especially if you don't want, you know, there's only one seat to have someone sit mm-hmm. next to you. You can sit with, you know, one side against the wall and then someone can, there's only one spot for the person to get to you. Though the problem with that is, you know, service. Occasionally it'll be take the bartender a lot longer to come and get you a drink unless you actually know the bartender. And it's kind of, you know, if the place is empty, you're a jerk if you're sitting there.
Right.
You know, if place is empty, you want to sit as close to the, wherever it makes the bartender happy, basically.
I mean, if it isn't busy, I'll sit at the bar. I prefer to sit at the bar. But if it's busy, then people are always coming up behind you and order drinks over your shoulders.
Yeah.
I don't particularly care for that.
It depends on the bar. It depends on what you are looking for. And it depends on the time of day. It depends who else is there. It's really interesting to me, though, the idea of a particular side of the bar being, like, for regulars only, for... regulars and employees.
Well, at the Cricket, there was a musician's corner.
There always kind of is.
Which was by the back door, and that's where all the local rock musicians would sit.
And wouldn't you get a little uptight if a stranger walked in and sat in that area? You're kind of like...
Yeah, and it was annoying when you'd come in and that was filled up and you'd have to sit on the other half of the bar because it's just like, no, I sit over there. I'm a local musician. Right. That's a musician's corner.
I'm in with the in crowd.
Yeah. That's where all the surly musician drunks are.
Right. So. That's where I fit in. That's where...
I think that the absolute catbird seat is if there's a bar and it goes to a wall, and if you can get the bar stool at the very end of that and you can lean against the wall while sitting in the bar stool with your arm on the bar.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Maybe Bar is a good example. You know that seat? It's the single seat. It's the one seat before the well, and then the seats go around. But the only thing about it is there's that annoying machine right there on the bar in front of you.
Oh yeah. I hate that when you have the machine and it's... Yeah, you...
What is that?
Although I've heard it's a Megatouch.
Different gaming.
Oh, right. And that's where they usually put them to.
Yeah,
it's right where you right where you want to sit, Frank.
Oh, when you're really drunk sometimes.
It's an outrage. It's an actual outrage.
It is. Let's be honest about it. I like playing those sometimes when I'm pretty loaded, you know. Just to test
the strip poker?
No, the trivia knowledge.
Oh, the trivia, yeah.
Yeah.
Those things are going to disappear with the smartphones. Everybody has their own little individual mega touch.
It's true.
In their lap.
Yeah, so it's a great way to go out in public and not talk to anybody.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the smartphones and the tablets have really changed bar culture because you go into bars sometimes, and especially in the daytime when there's not that many people there, mm-hmm. and everybody's looking at their phone.
Yeah.
And bars, traditionally, you know, throughout the centuries, have always been a place where people got together to talk and, to, you know, to socialize. But they're bringing their own little worlds with them. They're like their little phone, they're all staring at it, you know.
Although I've always been the sort of person who sometimes likes to go to a bar and sit all by myself and read. You know what I mean? And I don't know if that's equivalent, like doing... Well, sometimes, you know.
Yeah, I'll do it sometimes.
Nah, yeah, so will I. Then I start feeling foolish after, like, the third drink. I'm like...
After the third drink, then you chat. But, you know, sometimes you don't want to be at home or whatever. You want to be out. But you also don't necessarily want to... interact too much.
Well, also, if you're going to
some
a strange...
Some people get really excited when they see people reading at a bar.
I know.
What are you doing reading at a bar? This is a library. Who? It really bothers them. I'm not sure why.
Wow.
Well, you know, when you go to a strange
bar... You never get hassled when you read at the bar?
Well, mostly people just chat at you, and that's okay, you know.
But, I mean, you know, when you go to a strange bar and you don't know anybody... Sometimes it's easier to start out until you get to like your third cocktail to have a distraction until you feel like you're ready to go, okay, I don't know anybody in here. I'm going to have to strike up a conversation.
Well, it's like you go to a coffee house.
That's also what the bartender is for. Sometimes
a good bartender.
At a slow place is if you're new, you start talking to the bartender and you try to get yourself included into the bar.
Sure.
Some bartenders don't play along with that.
Yes, true.
Remember old Bill from the Larian's Lair?
Uh-huh.
When I first hit town, this was way back in the 80s, and I would try and strike up a conversation with him while he's reading the newspaper. He just kind of slowly lower the newspaper, stare at me like kind of a dead-eyed stare, then the newspaper back up.
Iris told me about a bar that she went to. Iris, the old owner of Gabor's.
Oh, sure.
She
nice girl.
Went to a bar up in the kind of north side, and she said that she was really trying to engage with this bartender, but he was having none of it, absolutely not. And in fact, every now and then he would turn around, pour himself a shot, and drink it with his back to her.
I was probably afraid he'd be expected to buy her a shot or something. What a dick. Wow, where was this at?
Oh, I can't remember the name of the place. Well, yeah, some old joint
bar
up
etiquette.
And
there's definitely some bars that you walk into, and if you aren't a regular, it's just not on.
Which is ridiculous. Come on.
A bartender should never, I mean, I know this is an old saying, but they should never bring their personal business into the bar.
And that's a challenge.
I imagine it would be, but it's like being on stage on a show. I mean, like you go up there and tap dance, you gotta have that smile on your face.
I once saw Shanda when she was working at the Cricket whip change at a guy because he tipped her in the ass. Oh. He turned around, she just pegged him in the back of the head with a handful of nickels. And the guy called the police because
should we talk about Michelle?
He's like, you assaulted
whip and change.
He's like, you assaulted me, and then called the. Called the cops, and the cops came in, and we're just like, really? You called us because of this? And she's telling them, and they're just laughing. They're like, yeah, you should have punched the guy. He tipped you a nickel.
So
yeah,
who called the cops?
The guy who got hit. Oh. He was trying to press assault charges on her for throwing nickels at him.
Oh, what?
And the cops just laughed and, basically called him a pussy and told him to get the hell out of there.
Good for them. That's outrageous.
Really funny to me, actually. But, she wasn't too happy about it. It was like a $50 tab, and the guy gave her, 80 cents in nickels.
Okay, we need to address something really quickly here.
We're out of cocktails.
We're drinking beer, but we need another cocktail, I think.
Let's make another cocktail. Shall we do it?
Yeah.
With a smile on my face. I should
That's what I'm talking about. Now, what is next?
This is a Bloody Mary, but it's a Bloody Mary al fresco. So it's made with fresh ingredients. We're talking fresh tomatoes.
Now, don't throw your fancy Italian words at us. What is al fresco mean?
I'm getting to it, man.
Fucking fresh.
Is that what it really means?
It's all fresh, bud. Fresh. Fresh tomatoes, cucumbers, peppercorns, a little bit of jalapeno if you like it spicy.
Yeah.
We're going to muddle all that up and then pour in the vodka. So it's kind of in between a Bloody Mary and a Bloodshot because it's like a Bloody Mary martini, let's call it.
So you're eliminating the tomato juice.
Yeah. I also don't put in the Worcestershire sauce for this. This is really a fresh, afternoon.
It sounds like a vodka garden. Salad is what it sounds like.
It's delicious. You're going
to glorious. I think that it sounds glorious. A vodka salad.
Like a springtime or even better. I used to make these out of vegetables fresh from my garden and sit out there with these lovely afternoon cocktails.
Nice.
So you guys ready to try it?
Yes. I'm ready.
I'm always ready for a lovely afternoon cocktail. Irving, Texas just changed some of their liquor laws. They were a pretty tight town on that where you couldn't sell more than 50% of your sales in alcohol. The other 50 had to be food.
Wow.
And they've changed it in certain areas to 70%. 70% has to be alcohol.
Okay.
But then the people on one side of town are complaining about this because they think that if you allow a restaurant to sell up to 70% of their income in alcohol, then the quote was actually, there will be accidents and murderers loose on the street because when you drink, you kill people. Apparently, according to people in the south side of Irving, Texas, you murder people.
Yeah, Texas is actually a really weird place. I lived there for a couple of years in Austin. And, on one hand, it's like a really hard drinking state, and it's some of the best drinkers I've met are there. And they have I really love drinking with Texans because they love themselves, and those are the best people to drink with. These guys are like, yeah, man, let's do another shot. Hell yeah, Texas, man. Which I think is great. That said, it's also the home of MAD. It's kind of really a real strange dualism down there.
Well, I mean, look at Louisiana. New Orleans is pretty much the drinking capital of the U.S.
No doubt.
And in Vegas are the only two places in the country where the bars don't close.
24 hours.
24 hours. Where I can wander the streets with alcohol.
Reno.
Nevada and New Orleans. I mean, New Orleans, you can wander the streets with an open container as long as it's plastic. Only place I've ever been to that had to-go cups at the end of the bar where you could just dump your drink into it and walk out in the streets.
It's beautiful.
But you get up to Shreveport, half the town is dry. Because it's cross-county lines. So one half you can drink, the other half you can't. So, of course, there's tons of bootlegging going on there.
Right.
I had a friend who actually spent a little time in jail because he wasn't really, didn't even think about it, had a 12-pack of beer in his car, and then went to visit a friend, and they pulled him over and found the beer in his car, and he was on the dry county, and he had to spend 2 days in jail for bootlegging.
You can't even
bootlegging.
Transport beer through the...
Nope.
Wow. That is
so
insane.
I mean, dry county's a dry county. That's pretty much how it is in the South, you know, and which, yet again, there's many whiskey distilleries that are actually in dry counties.
Yeah, yeah. Jack Daniels, yeah. For example.
You can go to the distillery, but you can't get
or
drunk.
Or I should say the bourbon whose name we shall not mention. We're still boycotting them.
Yes, indeed.
You know what? I have been
but not,
for
but not,
I have not had a...
But not Tiger Whiskey.
No, Tiger Whiskey.
Not Tiger Whiskey.
Tiger Whiskey is actually the opposite of that. I mean, it'd make you crazy like Tiger.
Well, I hear there's cobra venom in each bottle.
That's not true.
Oh, okay.
See, those are rumors.
Those are rumors. Horrible, yeah. Horrible rumors about our sponsor.
It is 96 proof, though, so you're going to get some...
You're going to get good and wasted, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it's fantastic stuff. It has a certain taste to it.
A certain taste. What is this certain taste? I have not tried it yet, so I'm curious as to what this certain taste
sort
is.
Sort of almost an oily, tropical... Yet it's very dry as well at the same time. There's a kind of oily tropicalness to it. It's really hard to put your finger on it. It's...
Cobra venom.
You know, it could be some kind of venom in there.
Could be. Does it numb your tongue?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm betting cobra venom, but, you know... Well, I'm not saying that bad. I think that's actually a great sales pitch for it, because I would drink cobra venom.
Maybe that's why they're having a hard time distributing.
I would drink cobra venom whiskey. You know, I've drank whiskey with the snake in it.
Yeah, so have I. Have you tried the tequila with the scorpion?
No, but I have actually had mezcal and eaten a worm.
Sir, a grub and a scorpion are two very different
things. Yes, indeed. I have drank the absinthe with a giant bug in it.
Yes, yeah, so that's provided by me.
Yes, yes.
The Absinthe Original, another sponsor for our podcast.
And there is no venom in there. It's just a giant beetle.
No, it's totally clean stuff. Another alert drunk critic, I don't know his name at the moment, sent me the link to it, this MIT guy. I'm not sure if he's a professor, a student, or whatever. He went to a MIT party, and he blacked out and woke up in the hospital. Apparently, up in that area, in that college, if you black out, they send you to the hospital.
Really?
Apparently so. Because he says, it doesn't say he was actually anything wrong with him. Like, you know, he hit his head, or he was, you know, pancreatitis or whatever. He just, he blacked out, so he ended up in the hospital for being blacked out. So I guess his nerdy roommate, so, oh my God, he's blacked out.
Well, here's the question. How did they know he was blacked out? Because he's not going to say...
He's probably sleeping.
By the way, I'm blacked out.
No, he's probably like, you know...
I'm not going to remember anything anymore.
He was doing the Frankenstein thing, probably like... Anywho, so he got up this brilliant idea of having these ice cubes and some kind of... electronic thing inside with a light diode in it, and it goes inside of sort of a gel substance, which is made out of some kind of sugar-based gelatin, essentially. And you put these in your glass as ice cubes, and it measures how many times you tilt your drink. So it doesn't like actually measure the amount of alcohol you drink, but it measures how many. So if you're actually, you know, one of those guys that kind of moves his drink around, you're gonna think you're drunk in 5 minutes. But anyway, after like three drinks, the colors change from green for one drink, yellow for two, and then red for three. So after you've had three drinks, your ice cubes are ratting you out, essentially. It's like, oh, this, you should keep an eye on this guy because he's already had three drinks.
That would be every bar I've ever been to.
I know. It's like, anyway, three drinks. Is that what an MIT guy takes to get drunk? I mean, three drinks? It was like 20 or something.
Well, you're implying that nerds can't drink, and I've drank with some nerds.
Oh, sure. I'm sure. But it's going to be the unintended consequences of having like people like, oh, dude, your glass is yellow, bro. Fuck, you got to drink more, man. Get up red like the rest of us. I'm red, man. I'm already red.
Well, yeah, you could be like, who can get your drink red the quickest?
But here's the kicker, though. After it reaches, it detects you've had three drinks, it texts your mom or your friend or whoever, your wife.
Really?
It rats you out and says, this guy's had three drinks.
That's horrible.
Come and get him. He's had three drinks. You're starting to have fun. You better send somebody to grab this guy.
It's each time you tip your glass?
I can admit it. It's like it estimates, like, I guess, like 5 tips per cocktail.
What if you just drank it all in the very first?
It's not a precise system.
That's how you get your drink. That's how you get around it.
It sounds like a pretty bad science.
Who's trying to ruin our fun?
MIT nerd
engineers.
Yeah. Engineers, right. Okay.
Okay, so we've got this new cocktail here.
Okay. This is it.
The Al Fresco. Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. Chin.
It's clear, so that's because there's no tomato juice, right?
Right, well, I mean, there's smashed tomatoes.
That is fantastic.
Quite a different experience from any other.
It is like a vodka salad.
It's very fresh.
It definitely tastes the cucumber in there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Recommend this one. This one is fantastic, listeners.
Is it right to call it a Bloody Mary, though? Because where's the blood?
There's tomato juice in it.
Muddled tomatoes.
Smashed.
Oh, it's okay. So the tomatoes. In the form of a muddled tomato.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I would say yes, it's right to call it a Bloody Mary.
Yeah. So show your pie hole.
I don't know if al fresco is right to mean fresh in Italian, but
well, it's fresh vegetables.
The Bloody Mary part is right. I think the key with this too, you put all the vegetables in, muddle them, smash them, get them all in there, whatever veggies you liked. Here we have green onions, cucumbers, jalapenos. And tomatoes and peppercorns, and then you smash it all in, put in the vodka, shake it, put it in, and then put the ice on top, so that this way we're sifting, you know, you're not getting big mouthfuls of vegetables.
Very wise. I could see this with just the cucumbers and like maybe green onions
again,
because
that cucumber flavor
is great in there.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
Yeah,
again, this is one that you can make as you like,
and I'm sure they're serving these in the fancy cocktail bars like Williams,
like the Lion's Lair.
I've never seen one of these on a menu.
Really?
Ever.
Is this your invention?
Yeah.
It almost tastes healthy.
Yeah, yeah. And I, in your
Does
first
that scare
podcast,
you, friend?
You talked about. No, no.
Oh, no, I love it.
Kind of lifelong modern drunkards, we have to.
We do.
We have to balance it.
We have to take our vitamins, we have to exercise.
And you know what? Save your liver for like the good stuff, and we don't need all that, processed.
Red Bull. Yeah, actually, another booze news is there's been a large rise in.
Are you throwing some booze inside?
Yeah.
In this? Okay.
Yeah, in hospital visits due to energy drinks and alcohol.
Well,
because
energy drinks by themselves.
Yeah, but also mixing it with. Effect. Well, part of it is like rather than, you know, a lot of people wouldn't sit down and drink like 6 Red Bulls. But if you mix it with vodka, then it's just another cocktail. So you're drinking 6 Red Bulls and a bunch of vodka, which. You know, ups your heart rate. It's caffeine. It's guarana. It's all this other stuff that you really shouldn't have that much of it.
Yeah, this is a really healthy tasting drink.
Isn't it nice? Thank you.
Like a health nut would drink this.
I think so.
You would feel good about it.
Need a little wheatgrass in there.
And, I had this idea.
No.
I had this idea for a bar, and somebody out there take it because I think it's brilliant. But I wanted to just have all kinds of fruits and vegetables and serve drinks like this, where you would pick, say, 3 vegetables, muddle them up, pour your vodka on top, pour your ice on top, and you could just make like a... It'd be like an ice cream shop for...
No, that would like go over
ice cream
like
shop
Berkeley
drugs,
and Boulder and those sort of places.
Yeah, you know. You could have health...
Yeah, what's the wheatgrass and vodka? It's called a lawnmower or something. I think Homer Simpson invented it.
My idea was a health food bar, an actual health food bar. Because I like
to drink, but I also like to feel good and healthy.
Yeah, bean sprouts and...
Carrot juice.
Some people like the idea of going to a bar and, you know, being unhealthy, smoking cigarettes,
sure.
Because they're like, you know, they're living a Bukowski sort of thing. You're like, you know, fuck it, man. I'm throwing it all away, bro. I'm spiraling downward from here on out.
That's
I'm just spiraling down to Skid Row.
But you want to
go to a bar and it's like, let's get healthy. And
or just
you can have like a little jogging station or
something. No, I think it'd go over fantastic in Boulder.
Oh, no, no. Are you kidding me?
It would be delicious.
In Massachusetts, this would be like, you know, the number one chain in the...
L.A., you know.
Oh, L.A.
Any place in California, I think, really.
I think they're...
You guys are making my idea sound really...
I think it's your $1 million idea.
For certain people, I think it'd be very good.
Everyone's going to take it.
Well, you know what? Somebody take it, because I don't have the money to open my own bar right now. You can... If you feel like it, you can PayPal me. I'll give you my email.
There we go.
I'll give you my email address.
So you're bartending at the Lion's Lair right now, right?
Indeed.
Any other place? Or?
Nope, just the Lion's Lair right now.
And the Lion's Lair, if our other listeners outside of Denver don't know, is one of the great dive bar institutions in Denver.
It's on Colfax. It's got one of the best signs on Colfax, I think.
Beautiful.
Once featured in Dwell magazine. You know that? Dwell is like a kind of a modernist like magazine. It's about interior design. It's all about kind of like, what am I trying to say, mid-century modern.
Mm-hmm.
which I'm very much into.
Absolutely. It's beautiful. And it's an architecture magazine and a home design magazine. And it's really upscale.
I bet it was all about just the sign, though, right?
It was just the sign.
The interior.
Yeah, once you get inside and you've got the urinal filled with ice and...
Yeah, but they went by
which is something we should talk about, because why they dump ice in the urinals. And I've heard two different things. Some people say they're getting rid of the ice at the end of the night and they dump it in there. People can urinate on it and it's going to go away. And then and Tony once told me that it was the health board or something made him do it because it hides the smell.
Or it doesn't flush. I mean, that's a non-flusher. And well, there, it's just a trough with a drain and ice.
Well, are they getting rid of old ice from the night before?
I think actually they're doing
it. Old ice is not hard to get rid of. Like, ice removal is not a problem.
Okay, so why are they doing it?
Because it gets rid of the smell.
Yeah. Okay, that's what Tony told me. It gets rid of the smell of urine.
Yeah, especially since it's non-flusher.
Like, why does a backyard covered in dog shit in the sun versus a backyard covered in dog poop? I don't know if we'd swear on
shit. Shit's fine.
Shit's okay.
Fuck shit, goddamn.
In the winter, you don't smell it. In the summer, you cannot get rid of that smell.
Hmm. Well, there it is.
That's and now you
can
know.
Can I go back really super quick to the sign at the Lion King?
Oh, yeah.
Do you guys know Gary Isaac and his photographs and this photograph book he's doing about the Lion's Lair? No. It's all out front.
About the Lion's Lair?
It's mostly photographs. Do you know who Gary Isaac is? He photographs Slim Cessna a lot, and he kind of has this old-timey style.
I'm sure I've seen
about
this
stuff. And he is doing this photo book of just captured images out front of the Lion's Lair, all with the background. The common theme is the background sign. Hmm. And then maybe it's like a woman walking past with an interesting hat, or just it's
this
Gary
like
Isaac.
A real singer of a book.
Oh, I'm not. No,
they're absolutely
I would buy it
beautiful.
Because I'm
they're
really
absolutely
interested.
Beautiful photographs, sure. And he's Gary Isaacs. He's an incredible photographer, and it's worth mentioning. I really
is the book out yet?
No, it's a work in progress. Okay. You can look at a lot of his photographs on Facebook or online. Okay. In fact, Sarah Bell is my
so we
Facebook
just go to
name.
Facebook.com and there they are.
That's how it works for me.
And I yell at the Facebook and it comes on the Facebook. Isn't that what that's? Yes.
I am Sarah Bell. If you want to find me on Facebook, my name is Sarah Bell. I'm from Denver, Colorado. And anyway, my profile pic is a photograph that he took of me in front of the stage at a John Doe show at the Lair.
Oh, I saw that one. Yeah, that's really good. Yeah.
Okay, what's the next cocktail?
You know, that's all I really thought in my repertoire.
We still have vodka left, though, right?
We've got a handle.
And we have all kinds of ingredients.
Okay.
So here, real quick, though, I'd like to talk about what is bad bar behavior? What for you is the biggest peeve, the biggest
I mean,
red
I just want to say, I've mentioned it earlier, but really the important thing as far as a bartender, like you let a lot of stuff slide. You really do as a bartender, and you understand that alcohol is involved, and I'm a drinker. I understand what it's like
that
to be at a bar and
damn-
want
I'm trying
drink.
To be.
But just don't shout your cocktail orders at somebody who is not looking
there
at
is.
You.
Sarah's
that is
telling
the
you
most
right now.
Important
okay.
thing.
That's the main pet peeve.
Listen.
Well, there
yeah.
are two
Learn.
There are two right. things really in a busy bar. Number one, the worst thing you can do for a bartender in a busy bar is waste time. Okay? Mm-hmm. So have your order ready. Group your order. You know what I'm saying? Put your bottles together, your cocktails together. If you're with a group of people, have one person order for everybody.
Right.
Have your payment function ready, if it's a credit card or cash. If you're paying with a credit card, don't make me close your tab after every order because you're paranoid and thinking that I'm going to steal your credit card number or whatever. I make money as a bartender. I'm not right. trying to rip you off in any way. And if there's one thing about dealing with bartenders that I would like to say, it's just, number one, approach us with trust. And this just goes, like, in your life. Like, trust me that I am a professional and I know what I'm doing. If you walk around in life thinking everybody's out to get you, you have a terrible time all the time.
You have an awful life, yeah.
Yeah.
It's no way to live.
It's the same thing in a bar. Walk in, understand that I'm a professional and I know what I'm doing, and treat me accordingly, okay? And we're going to have a great relationship. Don't waste my time, and please don't shout your orders at me when I'm not looking at you.
There it is. I totally understand what you're saying, and I'm totally down with that, but you got to realize these people are drinking.
Yeah.
And there's going to be, they're there to have a good time. There's going to be some shouting. And
are you understanding? Are you saying
I totally
that,
understand it. I worked as a bartender.
Are you implying that human beings, like, can't... be polite or like be thoughtful?
No, I'm down with politeness.
Or that alcohol makes you less like human?
It makes you less robotic. I mean, it makes you more human.
Okay.
Which, you know, with all the frailties of emotions and such. So you're not going to be able to, you know, snap things off. You know, you're going to be like, oh, wait, that was the other drink. Oh, shoot. Hold on a second. Let me talk to John over here.
But on the other hand, like, if you're waiting for, like, 5 minutes until the bartender, you know, it's really busy.
Well,
and when the bartender finally comes up and goes, what do you need? And points at you and you just blank and you go...
That's in the 86 rules. You got 3 seconds. If you don't know by 3 seconds, you don't deserve a drink.
Yeah, and then the bartender can go on to the next person.
Right. I'm talking about if you really want to have the best working relationship with your bartender. And the bottom line is, we know bad bartenders. Mm-hmm. We've all dealt with bad bartenders. They do exist. You know what I mean? And I have had bad nights where I forget everything you said. I have something else emotionally going on and maybe I'm smiling, but I'm thinking about something that pisses me off, or I'm thinking about some worry that I have, which is ridiculous. But it happens. We're humans.
Sure.
Okay.
And so are your customers.
So the best thing to do, and didn't I preface this with saying that I understand alcohol is involved, but the best thing to do is to read your bartender and just try, even though, I mean, we're all drinking, but try to remain engaged.
And right.
Just
tip.
Try to.
And oh my God, tip your bartenders.
I mean, I do. I do appreciate good tips, but, even a jerk that's tipping really well is not going to get same service from me as somebody that is doing the best they can and is a polite person tipping me 50 cents a drink. I will be nicer and more attentive to that person than this asshole who's tipping me $10 around, but who I can't stand
to be around. He's like an asshole, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've both been bouncers. We've both been bartenders.
Mm-hmm.
All three of us have been bartenders. I mean, Frank and I have both worked as bouncers, where you end up, you know, we do know what is bad behavior. Like, when I was working at the Cricket, my favorite Cricket story is this guy walks up to me and goes, yeah, there's a guy talking to his penis in the bathroom. And I went and I looked in the bathroom and there's a guy with his dick out going, no, fuck you. And he's arguing with his cock.
What's wrong with that?
And I'm like, well, I really don't want to throw this guy out because I don't want to wrestle him with his dick out. So I go to his friend.
Why is that a crime to shout at your penis? I mean, is he...
Do you do that often, Frank?
Well, no, but if he's having a super long conversation with it, maybe that's going to disturb the other customers. Maybe just
he was in there for 10 minutes having an argument with his penis.
That's crossing the line.
And I went to his friends. I went to his friends and I'm like, your buddy's in there talking to his dick. He's got to go. And so they went in there and peeked in the door and they're like, yeah, he's talking to his dick. And when he finally came out, they're like, we got to go. He's like, why? The bouncer's throwing you out. And the guy lunged at me, but they grabbed him. They're like, no. He's being cool because he could have thrown you out with your dick hanging out. Instead, we're just going to leave, you know. So there is some unacceptable behavior that's pretty obvious. But... you know, I've seen people thrown out of bars just because they're the most annoying human being in the bar, and they're just waiting for an excuse to kick them out.
Well, you know? See, I've
been thrown out of bars before, so
bartender.
And I've thrown people out of bars, so I've been on both sides of that as well. But it's usually when I'm thrown out of a bar, it's for just kind of like.
I'll tolerate irritating.
Fighting and roughhousing.
Yeah.
I got thrown out of a bar in New Orleans for falling asleep because I've been up for 2 days.
You know, that is one thing you never want to do. You know what? I don't want to see it. If I'm drinking in a bar and some guy's falling asleep next to me, I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
It drags the whole team down.
All right. I think we need to devise another cocktail. How about we devise?
Okay, definitely.
At this moment, we've got vodka.
What do we need?
And vodka is the template that all cocktails can be served off of. I mean, it's the beauty of vodka is because it's a very generic alcohol that a lot of stuff can be made
vodka
with.
Is overrated.
Well, I think a lot of stuff can
I
be made with.
I tweeted this recently, and it's I hold this to be true because somebody just sent me a thing saying, hey, I'm a vodka expert, you should interview me. And I was like, vodka expert, that's like saying you write children's books. It
it's
is.
It's a tofu expert.
I mean, it's like you're an expert, but you're an expert, but I write tween novels, you know. I write it for dumb people.
Well, I mean, but what I'm saying is that's one of the great things about vodka is because it's basically a blank
tofu
canvas.
Tofu's a very good comparison.
It's a blank canvas.
It is. There you go. Okay, but...
Because, you know, whiskey has all of its own character and you can mix it with some stuff, but in general, I think a good whiskey, you should just leave the hell alone.
I mean,
we're drinking Monopolova right now, which is a triple distilled potato vodka. It's really good vodka.
I mean,
you can actually tell the difference from Monopolova than you can from, say, Grey Goose or something that's really expensive.
It's a slight difference.
Yeah, but
mix it with say
we'll do martinis. Mountain Dew. We'll do martinis, and we'll do a Monopoly martini.
Yeah, some martinis.
Yeah. Okay.
And let's do martinis. We got
I have some. You got some? Yeah. We'll take a little break right here. Okay, and we're back.
Now we're drinking martinis.
Sarah just made us some really excellent vodka martinis.
So in your opinion, what's the best way to do a martini?
The way I like to make a martini is to fill the shaker with ice, pour in the vermouth, and let it kind of burn the ice, pour the vermouth back out, then add the vodka or gin, whatever you're going to have. I like mine dirty, so at that point I like to add some of this fabulous, what do we have, Dirty Girl martini.
Yeah, they shipped that to us about a year ago. Isn't it very rare now to have somebody who actually likes a martini with a lot of vermouth? Back in the day, I used to like a third
half
vermouth.
Half and half even when they first started, I believe.
Yeah, for me, vermouth, not that great of a flavor.
I cook with
dry.
It's really good with
the
shrimp.
Norm now.
It's like when I was poor and I had like a little bar set up and it was always like the last thing left. You drink up all the liquor and you suck there at 3 o'clock in the morning, the liquor stores are closed, the bars are closed, and all you have is that freaking bottle of vermouth and you just gotta grit your teeth and drink it.
Sometimes. I remember you at my old warehouse Hog Butler where you're drinking the vermouth that had been open and you're spitting out fruit flies while you're drinking the vermouth and bitching us out.
It was all there was. Yeah.
You're like, how dare you run out of alcohol? Spitting out the fruit flies. That was actually when I was out of town. I heard about that from my roommates. I did not stock the bar that time. Otherwise, it would have been perfect because that's just how I roll.
Yeah, now, if someone orders a vodka, if someone orders a martini, it's a vodka martini dry. That just goes without saying.
Yeah, I'm not a big gin fan.
Yeah, you know? Gin martinis.
I love gin martinis.
I really do too, but it used to be when you ordered a martini, it was gin.
Right, absolutely.
And it had vermouth in it. And now, it's just a dry vodka martini.
What's a gimlet?
Vodka and what do I want?
Lime juice.
Lime juice, thank you.
Okay.
Or gin with lime juice.
Okay, but what's a kamikaze? I mean, hasn't kamikaze changed also? Like, nomenclature changes?
Well, a kamikaze is vodka, lime juice, and triple sec, but nowadays it's changed
Rose's
a lot.
Lime
with
Rose's lime and...
Rose's lime or Rose's fresh lime.
That's the beautiful thing about cocktails, though. It's an ever-evolving thing.
They're mutable.
Yeah. I mean, it changes with the taste of the time.
The new trend I see, which I love, is fresh. Fresh ingredients. People are making sweet and sour now. That was unheard of,
It's pretty amazing.
I don't know if I want to go to that kind of bar because the prices are going to be way more.
It's going to be insane. Yeah. I'm torn by it too because I mean there are these bars, but and I think it's cool that they're using local ingredients. And, they're making their own bitters, they're making their own mixers and stuff. But at the same time, I enjoy going to old school dive bar where they don't even mess around with that stuff. Everything is fucking industrial and chemical.
Can I just say that's the brilliance of the Lion's Lair. Is because right now we're a dive bar. We've always been a dive bar.
Of course.
But right now we use we have fresh ingredients. We are a dive bar.
Oh my
bar.
God, you are turning it into a hippie bar.
No,
I'm joking.
It'd be a hipster bar.
Hipster bar. I'm sorry.
Hippies. Not hippie bar, not hipster bar. There is nothing wrong with fresh flavors.
But how can you be a dive bar? I mean, dive bar is the whole idea behind a dive bar is you don't give a shit about that kind of thing. You're just,
That's the thing, and I've heard this discussed on your podcast. What is a dive bar? What makes a dive bar? Is it the piss smell? Is it the...
I don't think it is piss smell.
It's the environment. We want a good jukebox where we don't have to listen to crap. We want to feel comfortable. We don't want things to be too expensive.
No internet jukebox. I hate that.
They're the worst. They're the absolute worst.
It just means that it's a bland template.
It's too much power for the individual.
Oh, God. It's just...
No, the jukebox should be determined by the bar, so it creates a theme in that place.
And the Lion's Lair has a kick-ass jukebox.
It does.
Of course it does.
Always has.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I like dive bars. I like to go places where I feel comfortable, and it's kind of a rock and roll vibe, and it's not pretentious. It's not expensive. But at the same time, I want... to have a nice
locally
cocktail.
Grown mixers and such.
Well, how do you?
And I'll tell you one thing: the reason they're so expensive right now is because they're exclusive. The more bars that start to incorporate these sorts of things, it won't be so.
Yeah,
expensive.
You know what? I've been to some of these
because it's cheaper to make your own mixers, and it's cheaper. It really is. And that shitty fucking syrup water that you're mixed. Mm-hmm. Oh God, terrible.
Yeah, it's I'm torn by it. I've been to some of the more. the trendy bars in Denver, like Williams and Graham, where they, which I dig in the sense that they're making the old school cocktails. And they,
but
they,
I don't dig in the fact that I'm going to have to spend $15 for a drink.
And you're going to spend 15 minutes waiting for the drink to be made because they chip the ice by hand, which I don't give it. I mean, come on, just throw some ice in there. You don't have to hand ship it. I don't think that makes any freaking difference.
Yeah, a lot of it is just kind of posturing.
Posturing is the wrong word,
when you go from being a bartender to a mixologist, I want to slap you. I'm sorry, bartender.
They have a cocktail at Steuben's. I think it's the Rock and Rye. It's an amazing infused bourbon with all these
herbs.
That's
an old
But the thing about it is also it comes with this one gigantic ice cube in it, and it's just wonderful. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be a hipster. I'm not trying to be a snob. But I like a fancy cocktail once in a while. As long as I don't have to pay an arm and a leg.
When I went to Williams and Graham, it was for some Wild Turkey event. It was Nia White. Great, great guy. But he's like one of the brand ambassadors or whatever. And he was chipping out these ice into a ball. Apparently it's a Japanese thing. You drop it in your glass and you have this gigantic ball in your glass and just keeps, you know, it's like a big ice cube and just keeps your, you know, you drink cold.
It looks
really cool in the glass and everything. And maybe it serves some broader purpose that I don't understand, but it was a lot of work. This guy's working like an artist, creating this, you know, this almost perfect orb to drop into your glass. And it is from rim to rim. It was just totally fit in the glass. Which was awesome, and I'm drinking this. You know, it was Wild Turkey, and I was like,
yeah.
I didn't know how to feel about it. You know, because I'm an old school drinker in the sense where I the fancy stuff sometimes seems to get in the way of the whole drinking thing.
I remember this bar in Chicago used to do a late night happy hour after 2 o'clock because they're open until 4 there, and they had Three Mile Islands, but they had glow sticks on it. They had two different drinks with different colored glow sticks. But you'd walk into the bar, and it was a really dark bar, and everyone had a glowing drink. And it was kind of cool because they just...
Well, you're a fan of science fiction.
I don't know,
right?
That scares
yes,
me.
Yes, I am. And I write it as well, Frank.
Right.
As do you, sir.
I used to. It's totally true. But you know, I understand.
You're admitting that like you masturbate. That you wrote science fiction.
I wrote... It was futuristic action adventure.
I have one of your novels in French.
Do you read French?
Yeah. But anywho, that big, gigantic ice cube in that cocktail. I like it.
It's cool. I mean, if it actually serves a practical purpose, I'm totally down for it. But if it's just being fancy, come on.
There's something to be said. Just like those Bloody Marys we were drinking earlier. Yeah, it's the same ingredients, but it's the way you put it together. And it's with a little bit of love, and it's a little bit fancy.
Okay.
And you spice it a certain way.
I appreciate beauty as much as anybody.
It's aesthetics.
Sure. As long as you aren't juggling my drinks while you're serving them.
And as long as it's not $15.
Yeah.
Right.
We gotta find that.
You're paying for pretension.
And I hate going to those, you know, the kind of fancy, expensive bars where, if you get loaded, say you drink 20 drinks, whatever, and you happen to get hammered, and they
you happen to get
you
hammered
shouldn't,
after 20,
you know, be treated like a monster, you know, like, oh my god, this is a fancy place, you shouldn't be acting this way, get out of here,
put your pants on and leave.
That's why I love dive bars. You can act. You can actually, you know, go get out of control a bit. You know, release some tension. Go a little crazy, and they're not going to make you out to be Frankenstein or something.
Which is what a good dive bar is about, and which is the environment that I'm trying to create at the Lion's Lair. Like, yes, I can appreciate your sophisticated tastes, and I'm not going to roll my eyes at you if you order a glass of wine or order a fancy cocktail or want something to taste good,
guys,
to be fresh.
You guys
but
have
at the
wine
same
at the
time,
Lion's Lair?
Yeah.
Both kinds?
Both kinds.
Red and the white?
I can do that red
the mad
and the white.
And the dog?
We all like to get ripped, but at the same time, we like to feel good.
Well, that's the whole point of getting ripped, isn't it?
Exactly.
To escape a little bit from...
And sometimes you really do need a good
reality.
Solid tear. I mean, sometimes you're like... That's a big thing. Is sometimes you look at it and you're like, okay, you know what I'm going to do tonight? I'm going to get really, really drunk. And then if you're smart, you set things up like, okay, so here's my cab fare in this pocket. And then I'm just going to hit a bunch of bars. And when I'm done, my buddies will pour me into a cab and I'll come home and there we go.
But isn't there also some adventure and pleasure of not planning anything? It's kind of just a wide open sort of, you know, bender.
Well, you know, I agree. That's when I do my travel articles. That's I don't even have a hotel room.
Let the booze take you where it will, and you just
But this is the thing. Like, that is a fun experience, and it's exciting, and it's enjoyable if it's not your life. If that's your life, if that's every day of your life, it sucks.
It'd be gorgeous. Are you kidding me?
It's awful. Living like that.
That's how Bukowski lived.
I did it in my 20s. Doing it.
The most fertile ground is when you're getting loaded all the time. I mean, you get all these crazy, as long as you're recording it, you're writing the stuff down on napkins, whatever. I mean, that is when you come up with the great ideas, is when you're plastered.
But when you best express them is when you're a little bit more cohesive of mind.
I can't actually write anything creative when I'm drunk. I can't.
Poetry.
Poetry. I published a bunch of poetry.
You write drunk and you edit sober. That's this.
No, actually, I write sober and I edit sober.
You gotta have the balance. You cannot deny the balance, Frank.
I'm right, Emily Dickinson.
You cannot deny the balance between.
Screw you! I'm the poetry editor here.
I've had two more glasses of wine, so I should
put my head in the oven. But honestly, I hate poetry. I'm a poet who hates poetry.
Why would that be?
I don't know. Because all poets are self-centered, so they hate all poetry and they just like their own.
I think the average person's concept of a poet is like a kind of a sensitive sort of dandy, wearing fancy clothes.
Bukowski was one of the best poets.
There was that contrast of people like Bukowski who are, the kind of the hard-bitten, living on Skid Row sort of poets were actually, masculine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dylan Thomas. Let's talk Dylan Thomas.
Sure.
One of the best drunken poets ever.
Yeah.
And and he was that man was a genius, and he was a straight up like, let's get drunk and
absolutely
and go hang out and fight. I mean, I'm against rhyming in poetry.
Yeah,
in
rhyming
general.
Is not necessary.
I mean, song lyrics.
I think rhyming in poetry. Phonetic, I think phonetics are an important part of.
No, I think. Well, I think. Meter and rhythm.
What did the gentleman say? He's like, without the
Bukowski never
the rhyming, it's like playing tennis without a net.
No, Bukowski never used rhyming, and he was brilliant. But
I tend towards rhyming, I really do. But at the best time, poems it feels seem real like poppy.
The most memorable poems are rhyming. Seems
I don't
or
think
toasts
so.
For that matter.
Yeah.
So it's always
absolutely.
Rhyming.
Well, because we're humans. We have an ear. We like to have that phonetic sound.
It helps us remember things.
Well, I mean,
absolutely, it is a memory device. Mm-hmm. I think that's why all the Icelandic sagas and stuff were all done by rhymes, because it remembers
orally transmitted.
You remember the next.
Right.
That's I guess how people remember songs is because.
Well, yeah, as a singer, I forget it half the time because I'm drunk up on stage, and then I remember. Oh wait, it rhymes with this, and it rhymes with this, and there we go.
So, do you ever if you forget the lyric, you just make something up?
Oh, I'm
just mumble. Yeah.
Or just repeat the
verse.
What's
that old saying?
Yeah. Repeat the verse.
When in doubt, mumble.
or repeat the other verse and just go in. He's getting, honestly, when you're playing
second
live.
Second verse, same as the first.
Yeah, when you're playing live, no one notices. No one really notices.
Except the diehard fans who are the most disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Do you see little tears streaming
down
the face?
Hold on. You were saying die hard fans?
What are those?
I'm not sure with that with my band. I think we've got everybody in the band's girlfriend. I've had a Merlot, like a pink Merlot, which is weird.
I'm surprised they haven't worked out some kind of green wine.
What do you mean?
Oh, weed wine?
No, actually, it's green.
No, it's weed wine.
And
it's
you
weed
say
wine,
it's like eco-friendly or something.
No, that would be weed wine, and they're gonna come up with that.
Why would it have that weed in it?
Because we're in Colorado.
No, they could take some grapes and
there are no green.
They can work something. No, there are green grapes.
Monsanto will do it.
But that's white wine. Green grapes make white wine.
No, I mean the color is green.
Okay.
This is like $1 million idea right here. I'm just throwing them out.
No. I'm saying weed.
Man, this podcast for all
this is $1 million.
I go ahead and
steal all of our ideas because they're all vaguely stupid but worth $1 million. So, and I just pointed at the microphone. I don't know why I did that. You people in the audience.
Listeners
here, I'm going to point at the microphone and you get to hear what I'm saying.
Silly.
We need more martinis.
I think.
Okay, should I make another round?
Well, we have a handle. We had a handle of vodka. We should finish it. Then we'll say this is done.
Then we'll wrap it up.
Okay, so another round of martinis.
Okay, yeah, let's.
Dirty.
Fucking
like
let's finish this
work?
Handle.
Make mine a little dirty.
Mine was perfect. Just as you made it.
I do like it occasionally a little dirty.
Be right back, listener.
All right. Point at the microphone. Okay. Be right back, listener. All right. There we go.
Okay, and we're back. New martinis. I think we finished off the handle of vodka.
We did.
Hooray!
Hooray!
Fuck you, handle. All right, here
we go. Chin-chin.
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 Oogie Wawa.
These are awesome martinis.
Isn't drinking and getting drunk all the time essentially a war against death? Don't you think?
Hmm.
I mean, it's like, if you're, here's what I notice. I think it's a war against
the crap you have to deal with in life.
No.
It's not a war against life. I don't think it's a war against death.
It's a war against death because, I mean, I've gone like sober like for a week straight. And it is, first it goes by really fast, and then it's really bland, and it's really boring, and it's not exciting. I mean, it's like you just sacrifice a week of your life toward the grave, and nothing was really accomplished.
But
when I get drunk during that period, or if I'm drunk the entire period, it seems like I'm dragging my feet toward death. I'm not moving as quickly toward that direction.
A buddy of mine, I was hanging out with him yesterday at the bar, and he's drinking soda and bitters, and he's like, "I'm not drinking. Try not to drink."
That's not much of a cocktail.
Because he's my age.
Does he realize there's no alcohol?
He's in his 40s. And he basically is saying that it's rough getting up in the morning when he drinks the night before. So he's decided to like just stop.
Well, no kidding.
But he's decided to stop drinking. And he's like, "I feel great when I wake up, but then I'm bored out of my skull the rest of the time. What am I going to do?" Because honestly, if you ever want to go sober, the biggest enemy that you have is that you have nothing to do.
And you lose those gorgeous hangovers. I've learned to like hangovers. I learned to, you know, actually, I've categorized them. I've named them. I dig their texture. It's like I've met so many of them that I've learned to work with them.
Well, but what I'm saying is that I see that sobriety, the biggest bitch about sobriety is that it's boring as hell.
Oh,
drinking is one of the most entertaining things you could do on the planet. It is for yourself. And honestly, quite often for other people.
Well, death is...
Why did humanity embrace it so much as we have? Alcohol. I mean, from the first, the cavemen came out of the caves, they found fermented, you know, fruit, and they ate it, and then all of a sudden, alcohol has been with us for a very long time. And
as soon as we settled down, we
immediately started to turn a lot
of
the
grain. So in that way, alcohol is totally the opposite of death, in the way that death is like the end of everything and the total boredom. And like, I don't know if you can say boredom, but it's the end of everything. It's the end of consciousness. It's the end of...
You only believe that because you're an atheist.
But drunkenness is like complete like engagement, complete like fun, complete like forgetting about everything that
all the stresses of the common day stresses of the world just go away.
Most cultures found alcohol equivalent to getting one with God.
I totally agree with that. I mean, that's when I felt
closest. So in that way, it is fighting death.
Okay. And I think blackouts with Paris, if you are an atheist, as you plainly are, where you think you blink out like a light bulb, I think the blackouts prepare us for that eventual... I hate even thinking about it. I mean, I would rather actually suffer in purgatory, not necessarily hell, but purgatory, before I would just blink out. The whole concept of blinking out, it just really disturbs me.
Yeah, but maybe...
Who the hell wants to blink out?
Yeah, but then once it happens...
I know, you're gone. That's the most disturbing thing of all. You total loss of consciousness. I mean, and forever.
No, it's not the loss of consciousness. It's the loss of self that you're worried about.
Loss of everything. I mean, we're just gone.
Yeah, no, you're worried about the loss of self.
Or, no, if I was worse, when I used to be this way when I was a teenager, is the après-moi le déluge concept, which means the universe dies with me. When I die, the whole universe dies too.
For you?
No, exactly. I mean, maybe this is all just a dream in my head.
Right.
And this is all...
All right, Sart. You know, I mean...
Yeah.
No, but it's true. Who's to say what this really is, what this consciousness really is? And I mean...
It sounds like totally deep.
I'm saying it's a war against boredom.
I can look straight to the grave. I say, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to... Then I'm going to end up and I'm going to die then, I'm going to go in the grave. When you're drinking, though, it puts all those kinks and turns into your life.
So you're saying drinking throws in curves on
the... It throws the monkey wrench in, so you don't know exactly what direction you're in. I mean, by the night and by the life as well. I mean, when I, you know, when I'm drinking steadily, I tend to take more chances, I take more risks. not just per night, but, you know, in a broader sense as well.
You almost feel like, I feel like when I'm drinking, I'm like, I'm going to live forever. Like, I get this, like, sense of I'm totally combating death. Even though I may die any moment, and even though I'm taking chances that, like, might bring me closer to death or whatever, something about drinking, like, makes you feel invincible and makes you feel like it's a war against death in the sense that I'm going to live forever in this moment, and it doesn't matter. Of course I'm going to die. But this moment matters so much to me.
Exactly. You have those great moments like that where you feel like, oh my God, this is the most incredible. And it kind of stops time a little bit.
Those are the things that you hold on to.
If I'm sober for a week, which is, you know, of course, very rarely, but it's like the week just goes like that. And it's like,
I mean, I wrote a song called one of the lines is 5 days sober, life's ganging up into me, legs in concrete. And the whole concept of it is that I was, you know, I have been sober for over a week, but when I do it on purpose, it is the most boring thing on the planet. When I try to do it on purpose, like, oh, I'm not going to drink because I'm hungover, I'm tired of feeling like shit, and I'm going to do this. And then I end up finding, like, spending all my time like, oh, I guess I can sit in front of the TV and I can do this. And there's no joy. There's no joy.
You're just marching.
There is a term in French.
You're in the lockstep toward the prison of death.
Joie de vivre.
There's no joie de vivre. There's no experiencing life as the current moment in beauty. There's no beauty in life because I am bored out of my fucking skull.
No, it's all like gray.
So in that way,
it's like driving across Kansas.
Sobriety is embracing death. Because it's not embracing death, but embracing.
Well, it's embracing boredom is what I'm saying. It's like.
Well, you can see the grave in front. I mean, you can see it's a straight line. You can just get this perfect clarity, and there you are, dead in, you know, 40, 50 years.
So in that way, it's embracing death. It's embracing, like, well, I'm going to die someday, so I'm just going to do this. Like, to me, somehow, like, drinking and being drunk, like, transcends all that.
Yeah.
All of a sudden,
everything.
You get
this gorgeous feeling of just beauty and, like, yes.
And I'm going to live for, I could live forever because something could happen.
You feel bigger and better and smarter and greater. I mean, you're just like a different person.
Yeah. So I could see.
You're bigger than yourself at that
point. Oh, but again, who said that? William Faulkner said, once I've had 3 martinis, I'm bigger, brighter, taller. No, there's no stopping me.
Yeah.
Apparently there's a gene where if you have that gene, alcohol affects you a different way. You get more joy from it than the average person would. It's like 10% of the population. I'm pretty sure I'm one of those people.
I mean, but we're talking also genes versus nature versus
how did
nurture. Nature versus nurture.
That?
Nature versus nurture is basically, it's not A or B. It's basically, okay, here's the nature is the expanse you get from your DNA. Say you're actually a joyful person when you get drunk.
Right.
And on the other side is all the crappy shit that's had to happen in your life shortens that huge span of how much you can experience. And so there's some people who just, honestly, I think shouldn't drink.
No,
it
has always been. Some people should not be drinking.
But it's also,
they can't handle the effect.
It's also, part of that is the nature that happens. Like, okay, some people are just bad drunks genetically. And also some people are decent drunks, but stuff that happened in their life that they're just angry. It makes you more human. As we talked earlier, it makes you more yourself. Sure. And if you are an angry, fucked up human being,
it'll amplify that.
It will amplify that. Yeah. And if you're actually someone who's good with themselves and enjoy life, is going to make it better for
you. Well, it's like Abraham Lincoln said. I mean, we all have the lighter angels and the darker angels in all of us. And alcohol can either bring out, you know, the lighter angels or your darker angels. And all of us have the darker angels inside of us.
This is the thing I want to say, is that haven't you guys all had that unfortunate experience of drinking too much and something terrible comes out? You have no idea.
There have been
occasions. And it doesn't mean that you should never drink again.
Of course not. No, I mean,
because most of the time you're a great drunk.
The vast
once in
majority
a while,
of the time,
that dark
exactly.
thing comes out, and you're like, "What the fuck is that?"
Well, you know, and that's plain and simple why you should. Okay, AA, when they talk about AA, you're a diseased human being because you like drinking. No, basically, I think they should focus on, more on why, what is the reason why you're a dick when you're drunk? Their entire personality changes after.
Oh, no question.
And we know them.
Yeah.
I'm an alcohol abuser. There's no doubt about it. Like, it's easier for me to deal with shit if I just get drunk.
Sure.
But ultimately,
you know what?
There's nothing wrong with that. But ultimately, I have to get to a point in my life where I can deal with it without alcohol.
Why would you want to get to that point? Winston Churchill drank booze his entire life till he was like 90 something, and he beat the Nazis, and he never stopped drinking. Why would you need to stop?
Okay, here's an example.
You're working toward where
I'm telling you right now. Okay, so
are you going through a phase or something?
No, I'm not going through
alcohol
a phase.
Alcohol is our constant. It's been our constant.
Are you
going
to listen? You're
going
to ask me a question. All right, go ahead. So you're going to listen to my answer.
Go ahead. I want to hear it.
Okay. So, I can deal with it in this certain way, and alcohol helps me deal with things emotionally and makes me calm myself.
Oh,
right,
awesome.
Now
it's incredible.
It's fucking perfect. I love it. And
no,
no way disparage that, because I think it's important at the moment to calm the fuck down and to have a drink and to feel
good. A
very
useful tool.
But in the long run, if a repeated problem keeps happening with somebody, or a repeated like emotional issue keeps coming up,
you just keep gobbling aspirin. If you have a brain tumor, you just keep eating the aspirin. Just keep eating the aspirin. Eventually, the brain tumor goes away.
This is
I'm joking,
thing.
Of course.
Is
no.
That alcohol helps you deal with those immediate feelings.
It does so much
but
more.
But ultimately,
you have to deal with
it. It's a life bomb.
You need to face
it. It's not just for individual feelings, it's a life bomb in general.
It is a life bomb. I don't disagree with you in any way. I love alcohol.
So you're saying you're heightening your drinking.
But eventually you have to deal with the problem, is what you're saying.
Yeah, eventually.
You're saying that.
What I'm saying is that eventually. You need to confront that thing. I don't know how we got. I'm drunk, so already I've kind of forgotten.
Yay!
Is there any more vodka?
What started that?
Is the vodka gone?
No, we
drank all the vodka.
We have whiskey.
No, I think we're gonna have to close this one down.
Okay.
All right, we're gonna wind it up. All right.
Tiger whiskey.
Tiger whiskey. It makes
you crazy like
crazy
tiger.
With the.
I got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. She won't be much when she
Denver,
gets through with
Denver
me.
Joe,
and they milk the... mention the...
That's
they,
not true.
No, okay, so they don't milk the
False
tigers.
Rumors.
All right, fair enough. All right, this is the has-been the Modern Drunkard podcast with Sarah Fisher, our favorite bartender.
Frank Keller Rich Lair. And...
Frank Keller Rich, and I'm Nick Plummer.
Has been an absolute pleasure, you guys.
And,
thank you so much for having me. I feel honored to be here.
It has been our pleasure entirely.
And thank you so much for... all these fantastic drinks.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you for having me.
Giant martinis.
Honoring me with this wonderful.
And it is awesome.
Honor.
Thank you, people.
Cheers.
Chin chin.
Till next time.